590, The Fan.
J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Text line Tuesday, 590-590. Your texts. We'll sprinkle them in throughout the show today. We'll definitely have a dedicated block later in the show. The Twitter timeline was not kind of me yesterday, where it popped up and people are going over the Nazem stuff. It was just a great, what a day for Nazem Kadri. Hat trick. He does celebrations right in the face of Blues fans that have been threatening him and giving him the gears all. And yet, even as good as this is, what Nazem Kadri did last night was incredible. But as good as this is, I want to start this block by talking about the Battle of Alberta. I expected this to be a really fun series. I expected this to be a high-level series. Game one was obviously disappointing from a hockey standpoint, but super entertaining from a holy crap, can you... What we joke is, this game is drunk standpoint, right? The tweet, this game is drunk. I look for it. By the way, shout out to all the people who send me people who
yeah,
are,
they
who
tag us
tweeting
now.
These. Yeah, yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. This game is drunk. This I saw someone, a
this
notable
series,
writer,
yeah.
right? This series is drunk about the Celtics and Miami series.
Also, can you guys not handle your alcohol? Why do you, anytime you have a couple drinks, you get this out of control? You get 9-6 hockey game out of control?
Well, yeah,
get it together.
That's a good point. Hockey is in a great spot right now where the NBA can't get a good game in its conference finals. So every night hockey is must-see TV for everyone involved. Like, I don't know what the case is to be watching the NBA playoffs right now. It's horrific. Every single night it's the first quarter and the game is over in every game. And even the ones that are like supposedly closer and more interesting, like the Warriors and Dallas game the other night, like ends up being not really a contest where Dallas is fighting their way back from double digits, like basically the entire second half.
You know what it takes for me to switch off or to like be planning my night tonight? It's like, yeah, of course the West Coast hockey game is taking priority over the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Like,
no, it's
that's pretty
bad.
Rare for me, and it's a no-brainer tonight.
Yeah, there has not been a compelling storyline so far from the conference championships, other than like getting. I guess if you just consume the NBA from Instagram, you would think that Luka versus the Warriors is super interesting because of the animosity. But yeah,
Davis Bertans, your guy.
Yeah, yeah, not Andrew Wiggins. And I'm going to talk about Wiggins later in this block. But starting with Battle of Alberta, I expected this good series. I expected this interesting series. I expected a lot, physicality, goal scoring, goaltending, storylines, all kinds of fan bases, crazy buildings, crazy fans going absolutely nuts. I know Connor McDavid, this sounds like a stupid thing to say almost, but everybody knows Connor McDavid is special, that he is the most talented player on earth. But what we're seeing right now is the most talented hockey player on earth having his moment. Like, the one thing that's not on the resume for McDavid is playoff success. It hasn't been done. And I don't care what his, like, numbers have been before. This is incredible. He has just taken over the series. Matthew Tkachuk was at the podium after that last game going, yeah, we've let one guy beat us in this entire series, and we got to figure that out. Every time McDavid has the puck, every time he's doing things that are special, it feels like everyone else is working on like a different, like that speed is not the same for them, that everyone else is kind of stuck in mud watching him play. Like, the other players are in awe of McDavid as much as we are in awe of McDavid. I cannot remember seeing something like this. We've seen players take over series before. We've seen guys play incredibly well, but it's usually done in a certain way with hockey when someone dominates, right? The 200-foot game where we go, oh, this guy's best player on the ice, he's everywhere. McDavid just actually does feel like he's everywhere. That play he made and on the non-scoring play of the night where he closes the gap on a defenseman and just rips down the ice and tears the puck off him and creates a goal-scoring chance, I go, there's no one else on the planet that does that. the watching him play off the rush right now, the vision that he has, the way that defense is just like completely sucked towards him and go, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? And then it's on somebody's tape for basically a tap in. It's beautiful. And I will say this, that it's like, I don't know what you could even make the case for as close to as entertaining as watching Connor McDavid in sports right now. Like, it is, it's not about the series anymore. That's how he's playing. It's no longer like the Battle of Alberta. It's, hey, you got to watch what McJesus is doing right now.
Well, yeah, it's that, and then it's also like I have nudged from, okay, Calgary's the most interesting team to go up against Colorado to.
No, I'm fully – I need to announce this right now. I was cheering for Calgary coming into the series.
Nope, not anymore.
It is over. I have 100% shifted my allegiances. Please, Edmonton Oilers fans, welcome me to the City of Champions. I would like to formally announce my allegiance in the Battle of Alberta to the Edmonton Oilers, and it is for one reason and one reason only, and that's because I want to see the McDavid train keep a rolling. I don't want to watch – I can't go back to watching hockey without McDavid again. Like, I can't do that. I need to watch McDavid. This whole series was like, oh, Johnny Goudreau's line, 5-on-5 line. Oh, my God, these guys, you should see this. The best line in hockey. Oh, Johnny Gaudreau didn't get nominated. Oh, this is BS. Nobody cares about Calgary. Nobody cares. Well, those guys should do good things. Those guys should be much better because guess what?
McDavid, you shouldn't have played the most boring first round series of all time. The McDavid dominance is special. We saw it from Auston Matthews at times this year, and we were like, wow, he really takes over the game. Connor McDavid is in like full Tom Brady mode where not only is he dominant, he's in Calgary's head. They're making mistakes that this team has been built on. Like, this is a Daryl Sutter team making silly defensive and neutral zone mistakes because of the McDavid threat. Here's a full list of guys who made the second round in the history of NHL who have averaged the same points per game or higher as Connor McDavid is right now. Daryl Sittler, Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
End of list.
Yeah.
He became the first player in NHL history to get multiple points in 9 out of his first 10 playoff games.
Yeah, these are not cheap points, though, either. There has not been one play where you go, oh, McDavid was just around it, or he was the receiver of a tap-in, or a second. He's creating all of these plays. And I have a tough one because I keep looking at, okay, clearly the Oilers were justified in signing Evander Kane. They took a lot of hate.
Evander Kane hat-trick.
They took a lot of heat, a ton of heat, from me included, about signing Evander Kane. I would say that along with my Jason Spezza, it wasn't a big deal that he didn't play with the Senators bad takes, was my take of I don't want the Leafs to sign Evander Kane because that's more drama than this team needs and they're rolling right now. It's a different team, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they could have absolutely used Evander Kane on that kind of contract. That would have been really good to have. For the team that had no secondary scoring and was desperate to find a winger for John Tavares, they absolutely should have been in on that guy. Sorry, but it's a hindsight thing. I'm not blaming Kyle Dubas for not doing it. Everybody who passed on him based on the personal life resume was probably justified in putting that out there. It needed to be a spot. I don't know how many places he even personally was considering. I know he did want to be in Edmonton. Edmonton liked him. The relationship was very reciprocal, like out of the gate. But boy, that take has... All the Evander Kane takes about Edmonton are they're in a dumpster somewhere because he has killed it for them. But I don't even know sometimes how much credit to give him because you look at some of the goals that McDavid sets him up for and you go, oh, okay, Ailish got that. Ailish, I actually think that you could play on a line with McDavid right now. Like, I'm serious. I think that he's playing so well.
She couldn't, though, because he'd get in his own head. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, that's probably true. You're right. You could derail him. Maybe Calgary should actually sign you to just a short contract.
You never know the threat
of playing you, and he has to at least think about it because you might dangle him again.
He'll see this ponytail and will be like, oh, no. Flashbacks.
This is a sport where one of the biggest challenges it has is that their star players don't stick out enough. And hockey fans can say they do, blah, blah, blah. They don't. Like, you can have games where Johnny Gaudreau, you notice differently for a few moments. Baseball has a similar problem where everybody does the same exciting play, which is a hit a home run, and the home runs usually look the same. There's no real standout of a star player. It's why we love the NBA and the NFL is that the stars do things differently, right? Like a Tyreek Hill is incredibly different from a DK Metcalf. And you can just go, wow, These two guys, they're so different. Ja Morant does things way different than a Nikola Jokic. It's the thing that's baked into those sports that make them so special and so engaging and so interesting. The thing Connor McDavid is doing is he is just, he's breaking hockey. He's breaking the game. Where you go, I've never seen someone dominate this way in my lifetime. I'm sure this is what it looked like when Gretzky was in his prime. Just utter fear the entire time. There have been moments where Sidney Crosby, again, has dominated in his way. And it's a different way. It's a way where it's a quiet, oh my God, look what he just did.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing quiet about McDavid. There's nothing quiet about what he's doing. It's just every play off the rush is spectacular. It's breathtaking. The stick handling of McDavid, where it looks like he's sped up. It's like, oh, I've got my TV on a wrong speed here. Like he, again, it looks like he's not playing by the same rules of physics as every other player in the NHL. How is there such a big gap between this hockey player and everyone else? And I've said before, I wish we could compare McDavid more with Matthews, and this season was fun to do it, and I think it was justifiable to do it given that Matthews scored 60 goals and the way that he did it. But we're now at the point where it's like LeBron for throughout his prime, where you went, sure, someone else might win MVP because we got a little bored of this guy over the course of 82, but there's just no discussion anymore. Like, there's just no more ever comparing McDavid to anybody else. Like, what he is doing is such a degree of difference in the special category. Like, you can't. There's just no more of this. We need to never do this again. We need to take a vow as Torontonians that we will never again compare Austin Matthews with Connor McDavid. Like, you just, it cannot be done. It should not be done. We as a city need to come together and agree, like, if we're watching these series, that it's just not a thing.
Yeah, I think the biggest point of humbling that I've seen on Leafs Twitter is being able to say, wow, Austin Matthews might have scored the most goals and been the best goal scorer this season, but we can finally, you know, swallow our pride and say that Connor McDavid is the best player in hockey. Yeah, and he is, you know, it's just, that's a big thing for a lot of Leafs fans to admit that.
You know what other take is dead? And we've all done this. Would you take Sidney Crosby in one must-win game over McDavid? No!
Oh, my God.
No. Okay, again, Sidney Crosby. I remember when our guy Anthony Stewart put him on the Mount Rushmore of hockey players, and he took a lot of heat from that. Social media was rather mad at Anthony Stewart for saying that, and I defended Stewie. I went, it's not that outrageous. Sid's an incredible hockey player. I feel honestly grateful that I got to watch Sidney Crosby's entire career as an adult. Truly, where I went, man, I got to watch Sid the Kid, and I was there beat for beat. It wasn't like being a little kid watching MJ, whatever. It was like I watched Sidney Crosby's whole career. I feel so grateful having watched this guy do it the way that he did it, especially since there was a moment where we thought we were going to lose Sid to concussions, and then he came back and he was brilliant. But even Sid's rise wasn't like what we're seeing right now with McDavid. This is a totally different thing. Again, it looks like he's from a different era because it's unfair what he's doing. This is Bobby Orr stuff where people go, Bobby Orr, they weren't used to defensemen playing this way. They weren't used to guys that could skate like Bobby Orr. This was just a completely, that's what I feel like watching McDavid, is that all the other guys smoke cigarettes in the dressing room and they go in the offseason, they don't hang out, they don't train, they don't skate. And then there's Connor McDavid. Like, no, these are all highest performance athletes that you can possibly get working every finite margin to be great, other than the Florida Panthers players. But these guys are. And they know what they're in for. It's the Battle of Alberta, and you got one thing you got to do against the Oilers, right? It's not like they're a multi-line team with a ton of different players, wave after wave. It's like Connor McDavid goes off the ice, Kyler, you know, like it's like the drop-off in player.
Zach Hyman, hello.
No, but Zach, we'll get to we're setting up for a Kadri versus Hyman conference final, and it's going to be uncomfortable. it's going to be uncomfortable, I'm just saying. It's not going to feel good. But yeah, Connor McDavid, it's just, I I love watching him play every night, and this is a real moment. And I would just suggest to anybody that has to work early, whatever, just stay up late, get a nap, find a way. You have to watch what McDavid is doing right now if you like hockey. If you care about hockey at all, if it's like a I kind of like hockey, everyone's so, you just – sorry, you have to watch this. It is the number one thing in sports right now. Connor McDavid is having his moment. And to Oilers fans, you're going to say that's stupid because Connor McDavid's always been having his moment. He's always been this player.
No, this is
on the biggest stage against a regional rival where he's dominating every single night. It's the only comparables I have to him are – basketball comparisons where I go, this is Shaq in the playoffs for the Lakers in the 2000s, right? That this is LeBron with the Miami Heat, his second year in Miami. Like, that's all you can compare this to, is like basketball players who just dominate the game in a way where it changes the geometry of the sport. Shaq, LeBron, Connor McDavid.
I don't even know how to speak about it. Like, it's just like, it's you said it all. It's truly one of a kind. Can't wait to watch tonight. Like, it's just, it's must see TV. Imagine watching this as your first intro into hockey and you're like, oh, well, let's flip on the TV. What is this?
Oh my God.
You're in for a treat.
He's been phenomenal. And Zach Hyman actually has played really, really well. He's been like one of their jumpier guys in the series. Mm-hmm. Like, he's had legs every single night. Calgary's got to figure this out because, yeah, I think they're the better team. They're just getting killed by a superstar. And I don't know, tonight I'm looking at the betting lines and I would say, how is Calgary going to go down 3-1? And then I go, I can't bet against McDavid. I can't put my money against Connor McDavid right now. I don't want to put my money against Connor McDavid right now. Okay, so I'm going to pivot over to the NBA quickly here, which is I'm having trouble because these games stink. But I want to talk quickly about the Warriors because I think that this Warriors-Dallas series is going to be a wrap in four. That goes tonight. I would be betting on the Golden State Warriors. I think that they want the rest. I don't think that Dallas is going to bring their A-game punch. We'll see, but I just think that it basically even money right now. I kind of like the Warriors. Maybe we'll do this a bit more in the Wake and Rake, but I'm going to start with Dallas because I think they're going to get knocked out. I don't know what you do, Blake, if you're Dallas this offseason. Like, their formula is very tricky because I think right now in the NBA, the best two players are now Giannis Antetokounmpo and Luka Doncic. Like, that's just kind of being established. We'll see what version of Kawhi we get back next year when he's healthy. There are other guys that have emerged and been better. There's obviously Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid, the two MVP candidates. But to me, it's like if I was going to build a championship team and there were first two picks in the draft, my number one pick would be Giannis and my number two pick would be Luka, based on what Luka has done here. They have good players on the Mavs, though. Like, you look around and you go, I like Jalen Brunson, but I don't know how much I want to pay Jalen Brunson this offseason. They have Spencer Dinwiddie, who I think has been like, 100% return on what they thought they were getting in a trade. They have these bigs, these rotating bigs, where usually one of them any given night gives you something really positive, right? Powell, Kleber, and my guy Bertans, where you go, oh, okay, there's like something here. I think that you could get better there. You could get one piece that's a little bit more consistent there. But I like Dorian Finney-Smith. I think he's a fine 3-and-D guy. Same with Bullock. What do you tweak if you're their roster? Because I feel like this has been the difficulty for the Mavericks over the last couple off seasons. But now it's very clear, like, okay, you're into the Luka Doncic superstar prime window. You have to figure this out. And a couple of years ago, the Bucks made the Jrue Holiday trade where they went, okay, we're going all in. We're making our massive shift. We're going to go get somebody to play with this guy. I just wonder what you think that should look like, because you can't come back next year with a similar Mavs cast where we go, hey, this team has got good players, but I'm not 100% sure who the second best player is on this team.
Yeah, not only that, you can't really do the, well, Tim Hardaway might be healthy this year.
No,
like,
no,
that's
no,
not
no.
enough
that's
of
done.
A guy. Now, the honest answer is that they're in a really tough spot. Luka's max extension kicks in next year, and Jalen Brunson, who is probably on balance their third most important player, is a free agent and is going to get a significant raise.
See, who do you think's number two? Because I would have Jalen as two.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he is number two.
But this just gets to my point, though, is that it's like the Mavericks have a bunch of really nice players.
Right, and this is supposed to be
but they don't have
the
another guy.
And this is supposed to be the benefit of having a heliocentric guy like Luka that you build around, right? It's like, it's the early LeBron model. It's the Giannis model of, if you have one guy who is an offense unto himself, you can build out the roster with less expensive non-star role players. And as long as Luka's healthy, everyone slots into the right spot. And that's how you get these teams where they're better than they look on paper, right? Where no one's afraid of a team that has, oh, Spencer Dinwiddie, Davis Bertans, Dwight Powell, Reggie Bullock at the top of their cap sheet. But Luka puts all those guys, they all fall into the right position. Now, you kind of have to bring Jalen Brunson back, even though you did the Spencer Dinwiddie acquisition. You can probably find a home for Dwight Powell because his $11 million next year is only partially guaranteed.
Can you sign and trade Brunson?
You could, yeah.
Then that's the avenue I'm most exploring. I'm trying to sell high on Brunson. I think Brunson is one of those players that you love him when he's at a lower number, but as soon as he's making real money, because he's, if I'm him, I go, I want the Fred VanVleet contract. I want $20 million a year. That's my comp. That's my comparable. Give me that money. And as soon as he's making 20 mil, I don't feel as great about it. I just don't. If I'm Dallas, I've seen what my team is with Jalen Brunson as my number two scorer, and this is the ceiling, which is a decent one, conference finals, but I'm trying to do better than this. I'm trying to get in on something else.
Brunson averaged 16 points and 5 assists this year, and he's a 37 to 38% three-point shooter.
Yep.
I don't know that you're getting that back in a sign-and-trade for him. And not only that, this is a thing that we'll talk about it with the Raptors a little bit as we gear up for the offseason when it comes to guys like Chris Boucher and Thad Young at a much lower level. It's not pay Jalen Brunson $20 million or go pay someone else $20 million. It's pay Jalen Brunson $20 million and you're probably into the tax. Or, hey, all you have to shop is the mid-level anyway, because they are capped out. They don't have, again, maybe you could get out of Kleber and Powell's partially guaranteed deals. But sure, that's not enough room to make a meaningful free agent signing. And
you got to use draft picks. You got to use multiple draft picks.
It's a garbage free agent. And then this is the other issue, is they already owe their 2023 first-round pick from the back to the Porzingis deal. So now you're looking at, you can't trade this year's pick until after draft night, and then you can't trade a pick out until 2025. They're in a really complicated spot when it comes to cap and picks and the Brunson situation. So my best guess is they run the Brunson thing back, and they try to flip one of those, or maybe even pair two of those mid-tier contracts together. And yes, they hunt a second guy. I don't think they hunt like a second star. I think they're pretty committed to the Luka thing, and they saw how awkward the Porzingis fit was when, hey, your number two is not someone who naturally locks in next to Luka. But yeah, you got to do something. And I think that's probably going to be pairing a couple mid-level guys to try to take a swing at someone else. Okay.
So I'm going to slightly disagree. I think that the Porzingis thing is, if they use that as data of another star can't play with Luka, that would be a huge mistake.
No,
if
anything, a certain type of star.
Yep. If anything, though, well, one is that there's no certain type of star with Porzingis anymore. That's done. I actually was in the camp
Sorry, I was just gonna say the type of star who is just bad and not a star. Yeah.
I don't know bad. I think that people go too crazy with their Porzingis takes, where they go a little too far in the, like, he can't play when he's still a 7-footer.
I just have a tough time with shooting specialists who don't shoot well.
Sure, but he also protects the rim as well as just about any player in the NBA, which never really seems to get considered unless...
No, it's because we're not good at evaluating defense in real time, right? Where he looks a little stiff and he looks a little mobile, and then you look and it's like, oh yeah, opponents don't shoot around the rim when he's on the floor.
I still think that Porzingis was a really good fit for the Raptors from the standpoint of it was like a buy-low guy that they could have grabbed. The medicals apparently were not there with him, but if you looked back at that deal, I still think that that's one where, like, on the right team you grab Porzingis. What was the wrong idea for him and what is conclusive now in his career is that he's not a star player. He needs to be a guy that's surrounded by a bunch of good pieces because he got to play with this guy, Luka Doncic, who's having, like, his own McDavid-ish moment where we're going, he already kind of had that when he almost took the Clippers to the wire, like, single-handedly when it was Kawhi and Paul George. But now this is a little different. This is him making it to a conference finals where a lot of us really thought, boy, if they take game two against the Warriors, they might win this series. Like, I had a true fear that they were going to win this series. Now it feels a little crazy because Golden State is really rounding into form, but there was a moment where...
It's not crazy. You have the best player in a series. You're going to like a team's chances to not get steamrolled, right?
Correct. And that's the thing, is I keep looking at Luka going, boy, this guy is just incredible. The way that he's able to score, it's so strange watching him because he's still like a – he's just such a different NBA body type, and yet he's able to get to all of his spots with such ease. Like, you have – like, everyone was praising Andrew Wiggins for the way that he guarded him the other night, and we're like, oh, yeah, we're in the territory where a guy gets praised, the Andre Iguodala on LeBron in the finals territory, where you go, hey, you held Luka to 40 points. Like, way to go, man. You did awesome. You did great out there. You made him – this is it. Is it – yeah, he got 40, but he made him work for his 40, right? There's yeah. no better –
He's got 82 points over the last two games, and we're yeah. like, Wiggins, finals MVP?
But he's had to work for it, right? So that's the thing, is we're evaluating
– DeMar Avery Bradley thing, where you'd ask DeMar who's the toughest defender in the league, and he'd say Avery Bradley, and then you'd look at the stats, it's like, DeMar, you average more points against this guy than anyone else. It's like, yeah, but they're hard points.
Yeah. So I don't think Dallas can go into this offseason with the mentality of it's a small tweak here, it's a small tweak there, we were in the conference final. I think they have to go full Milwaukee Bucks, where they say, we're going to use every draft pick at our disposal to go out and try to get a star, even if it isn't a perfect star. Like, people thought Drew Holiday was a huge overpay. I remember seeing that trade going, holy crap, Milwaukee just gave their entire future away to bring in Drew Holiday. But guess what it did? It brought them a championship where Drew was their second best player. You can say he was the third behind Middleton, whatever. He was their second most important player on the championship team. You saw how good he is this year. And it's not even just that Drew Holiday is good. Obviously, he's good. But you surround him with a player like Giannis, and all of a sudden you're getting every little piece of return on the dollar for a guy like that. And so that's what the Mavericks have to do this offseason. I don't know who that player is. Everyone's going to be linked to Bradley Beal. But Blake, kind of to your point, it's like, yeah, Beal would be a nice fit with Luka because he can score and he's actually a star, whatever. But that's not necessarily the thing that needs to happen here. Luka Doncic needs another player that fits around him, that can just be a really reliable good basketball player. Doesn't need to be a superstar, but needs to be a fringy all-star type player where we know the pecking order is now Luka, and then this guy is number two. They cannot run this back where they go, we've got a bunch of weird big men, we've got a few fun wings, we've got some guards who can kind of play and create for themselves in some games and then disappear in others. That era of the Dallas Mavericks to me is done. It's over. They need to find somebody right now, and I don't care what amount of draft picks it costs you.
The one other thing I'll say on Luka, just to wrap this thought up, is they're not up yet, but MVP futures for next year, he's winning it. Like, he's had MVP numbers a couple years in a row, and it's just been like the last couple years have been Giannis and the bigs. And at some point you're going to see, well, first of all, we always get a little bit of the like narrative delay of like, we should have been talking about Luka as an MVP for the last couple years. Dude almost put up 30, 10, and 10 this year. Like, that was an average night for him a lot of the time. If I could lock in an MVP future right now, I think this is Luka's. Obviously, everyone knows who Luka is. This is his big playoff. I'm not dragging a team, but I'm leading a team to the conference finals, probably ahead of what our schedule should be. And then I think that's going to carry over into next year, where this Dallas team is going to be a very good regular season team again, and you see a lot of Luka MVP love.
Well, he also is in a really good spot where if he can go into this offseason and drop 5 pounds. Luka, you got to drop 5 pounds and show up. And Luka needs an offseason where he does the Vladdy thing, where he leaks one hot Instagram pic with some good angles and says to the media, like, I'm caring more about this part of my game. It shows up to camp and then plays well, like better out of the gates, and I think that he wins MVP. What usually costs Luka in some of these races is that we're expecting that offseason from him the last 2 years, and it hasn't happened yet. We're still getting more photos of him drinking beers than lifting weights, which is fine because you go out there and score 40 points, so really who cares about it in a playoff game? My only thing is, so much of the MVP race is about narratives, and Luka always seems to come out of the gate slow with the whole, like, hey, this guy isn't showing up well to camp.
It's a very,
hey, Haralabov
has
European a story about how he
thing.
Likes 20 Coca-Colas still.
Yeah. It's a very European basketball thing, though, of like, and we saw this with JV early in his career, too, and I've talked to some, you know, international players over the course of the year. Gasol was another one. Is like, the way that basketball works over there, obviously, in some of these places, it's like a religion over there, but your season is your season. And the season is about working yourself into shape for the playoffs so that you're peaking in the postseason. It's a little different over there where it's not, hey, day two after the season ends, you're already working to peak for the start of the regular season next year. It's a little bit of a different mentality, but we'll see.
Another perk of living in Scandinavia, right?
Yeah, if it exists. That brings us to Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Something to chew on today. Is Scandinavia a real place? JD says no. What do you let us know your countries that you don't actually believe exist. No. So something to chew on tonight. We don't need to chew on the specifics of how we got here because I think it's all pretty straightforward. And I think we're probably all on Team Kadri with this one. But the something to chew on here is there a cooler way to kind of stay above it and get your revenge on the ice or on the court than coming out the next night after all that drama, after the opposing coach says nonsense about you, after you get a water bottle thrown at you, and you are the guy who has never stayed above it, and you stay above it and lock in a hat trick. That Nazem Kadri performance too. Last night, pardon? He got jumped a couple times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is an all-time FU game from Nazem Kadri. To have a hat trick in that one with everything that's gone down the last couple days, I know this isn't really something to chew on because I'm just saying I've chewed on this and I've decided the Nazem Kadri game is delicious, but you guys can chew on it a little bit if you want.
My actual question is, do you think that the play where that hurt Binnington was dirty?
Mm-mm. No.
No. He's going for the puck until I think it was Kali Rosen was the defenseman who changes his path.
Mm-hmm.
No one, I don't care how much you hate a guy. You got a chance to poke in a loose puck in a playoff game. You're not in a split second diverting from, ooh, loose puck at an open net to I'm going to run this goalie. He's heading on a different angle until the mm-hmm. defenseman makes contact.
The overhead camera really shows that he's honestly skating one direction away from the net and Rosen moves his direction. And yes, he could have stopped more. Like you can say the same thing with Lucic and that where he was running down the ice and hits the goaltender. I think that if it wasn't Kadri or Tom Wilson, we wouldn't be talking about that play, you know, just because of his postseason history. And that adds to the conversation around it. I really strongly believe that it wasn't a dirty play.
I get why Binnington would be so hot-headed about it because he's a hot-headed guy. He was playing incredibly well, and his team, he gets hurt, and he gets hurt by the guy who mm-hmm. has got that reputation. It just, I empathize with both of them. I'm just saying, like, I totally mm-hmm. get it from Binnington's perspective, and I thought it was a little overlooked, like, in the discourse around all of this, is that Binnington legit carried a team to a Stanley Cup win, and this team that he has this year could have done the same thing with the way that he's
playing.
Well, I think
that's why the team reacted so intensely in last night's game. Just chasing Kadri around the ice and like sucker punching him, and there was that one flying elbow that honestly was going to decapitate him. Like there was some outrageous stuff.
The Blues, I actually think they bleeped up because you can't give away games to the Colorado mm-hmm. and they let that game become a circus chasing Kadri around. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a big difference between taking a shot at a guy and having it look like, did you guys prepare for this hockey game? Like to actually try to go out there and win this?
Or their game plan was literally just like, chase this man.
What, so what? You guys, is your Stanley Cup trying to beat up on Nazem Kadri? Like, I don't really get it. But I understand, again, the frustration of Binnington in the moment where he's pissed off, mm-hmm. the team trying to say that we're sticking up for the guy. Kadri has to own some of this because that is his reputation for a reason, right? Like, this guy mm-hmm. wasn't hard luck, hard done by. It's the one part of the Toronto Maple Leafs fans always being upset about the trade is everybody thought Kadri was gone and everybody felt like there was no possibility of bringing him back after back-to-back suspensions where he absolutely lost it. So, yes, this is a great revenge game. No one wants to see Kadri suffer death threats and racist threats online. That's awful. But he has to understand that the team, the hockey, just the sports narrative around this is completely understandable based on the guy that he has been in the past. But I'm with the two of you. I watched the play a lot. And I was looking at the play through the lens of, boy, we got to really make sure that is there any kind of, you know, little detail here, right? This is going to get broken down to the microscopic level. I don't see a single thing that leads me to believe that was a dirty play. He's had a lot of them in his career, though. And so when you get hurt and it's a dirty player who hurts you, and I'm sorry, but Kadri's been a dirty player. Like, that's just he's an awesome player. You can say he plays with an edge, however you want to put it. He's been a dirty player in his career. That's just a fact. that happens, people are going to lose their minds. But the Blues, them letting it get to that degree is, as much as that's an awesome revenge game for Kadri, that's about as embarrassing as I can remember a team being in a
trying
like, real big game.
Trying to take a cheap shot after the guy scores and whiffing on it has got to be
peak. It was embarrassing.
You're embarrassing yourself with how you're conducting this hockey game.
And the Binnington throwing the water bottle at Kadri while he's getting a post-game interview.
But that I get.
That is,
no, I
defend
that.
He's just like a Binnington. Really, I just think Binnington is like, so lame.
I just think you're a loser. That's all.
I understand when you get hurt and it's Kadri who does it and he crashed in your net. That's what I'm saying. I actually get it from Binnington's standpoint. I don't think
did
that
you
it's
throw
professional.
A water bottle at someone.
Okay, can we relax though? It's a water bottle. Like, he's not going like, to brain him with a water bottle and have Kadri be like, oh,
you don't know
out.
If it was frozen.
I'm just just chill out. Like
the
honestly,
fact that people were calling like, oh, this needs to be a Department of Player Safety thing. Like,
shut
oh
up.
No. Yeah. I don't agree with that.
No, I stand with Binnington on that water bottle throw because I can't imagine what it's like to be at the peak of your game, get hurt by a dirty player, and then feel like, you know, he got the news. Like Binnington knew. He knew his season was done in the moment, or that the playoff series at least was gonna be out of the question. And he sees Nazem Kadri sitting there and they're talking to him after the game. He's pissed off. He throws a water bottle at him. No big deal. Honestly, don't care. Think it's a 0000000 big deal on the big deal scale. To me, it's like when they went, there's no more talking to PK Subban because he said get Listerine or whatever. Like I view that as the exact same level of who cares. This is the same thing. Nothing. But that wasn't a dirty play by Nazem Kadri. That's a reputation call by Binnington. Mm-hmm. It's a reputation call by the Blues. Totally understandable. Your text next. What do you think about it? Do you care? It's Fan Morning Show. 590-590 at JD Bunkus, at Ailish4FR, at Blake Murphy. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Text Lane Tuesday. We're going to get your texts now and sprinkle them throughout the show. So hit us up 590-590, and you can always send us stuff on social media as well. We got a good one, or lots of good ones, but just a little sprinkle of our Team Canada overseas. Jeff from Oakville says, first time in 73 years that Denmark beats Canada. I don't know how much you're paying attention to the World Championships, but yeah, Canada's been back-to-back losses from Switzerland and Denmark, and the Denmark one is pretty interesting historically because the first time they ever played each other was at the 1949 World Championships, and Canada won 47-0, which was the most lopsided score ever. And all 11 players on Canada recorded at least a hat trick in that game. So Denmark's come a long way, to say the least.
Again, listen, this is the number one case now for four-day work week is in Denmark, they got the four-day work week going. They got long
they're well-rested.
Now they're well-rested, so much so that they can beat us at hockey, that they went from losing 43-0 to beating
47.
Us. 47-0 to beating us at hockey. Listen, this is the way to do it. This is how things get done in this country, all right? You want something done? Put a hockey spin on it. Say we're going to get an Olympics gold out of it. This is how we get things done here. So, Ailish, thank you for bringing this to my attention.
Yes.
It is now going to be number one on the these are the reasons why 4-day work week. Who cares about mental health that we all say we care about? Who cares about productivity that workplaces say? No, we lost at hockey to a country that's on a 4-day work week. All right? Just figure it out. Switch it up. Let's move on.
Okay. Canada, a little bit having a tough go here at the World Championships. They can still defend their gold. Who knows? Okay, so let's sprinkle through a couple texts here. Atliff from Unionville says, would you rather be the Panthers and get swept in the second round by the Lightning or be the Leafs and go 7 with the Lightning in the first round but lose?
Say it one more time.
Would you rather be the Panthers who get swept or the Leafs go to seven games?
Leafs, no question, Leafs. Yeah. Here's the thing. The Panthers now have the most embarrassing exit of any team in the postseason.
That's true.
You geared up for this year. They spent picks to go get Sherratt and Claude Giroux. And Mason Marchman is a pending unrestricted free agent, so maybe he'll come back to Toronto and take a discount. This was an all-in year for the Panthers to prove that they're different and that they've taken a step. Again, like, I want to remind people.
And they showed that in the regular season.
They pushed Tampa better than any team last year in Tampa's run to the Cup. And Tampa won a Stanley Cup. And this year, without Braden Point, without their signature third line, Tampa swept them. And this is, again, a reminder of the dangers of making your future plans based on, oh, well, we pushed a team in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the Leafs have one plan one way or the other. This has just been my belief the entire time with the whole, oh, well, the Panthers got swept, so the Leafs should run it back. It's like, don't get trapped in that kind of thinking. It's too simplistic. It needs to be more complicated than that. Florida the year before pushed Tampa Bay. The following season, they performed worse against them. The absolutely that is on the table for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, you got to consider these things. So Florida, though, this year, Toronto having their, like, they lost better Stanley Cup that they won, their hypothetical Stanley Cups that they're continuing, the great participation. It's better than having Florida's offseason, which is like, boy, we gave up first-round picks. We're probably not going to be able to re-sign certain players. And now it's, you want to talk about things in your head. Like, the Leafs' first-round thing is definitely in their head, but how could the Tampa thing not be in Florida's heads? Who would ever, in their right mind, next year think that we're going to see a minus number in a betting line next to Florida's name when they play Tampa Bay? There was no Braden Point in this series, and they swept them. They swept them. Florida scored no goals. They were like 1 of 38.
How about Vasilevsky with another shutout on a game? He's turned it on, clearly.
He has. I watched Stamkos talk about him in the post game, like on the on-ice interview, and like, yeah, what are you even supposed to say? Like, you've had now three runs of this guy. You're on your third run with this guy playing this way. It must just be the most, I don't know, it must be the best feeling having that guy back there. But yeah, Florida was done. Florida was dead. They were never getting back in that series. It's super embarrassing for their franchise. Like, again, nobody cares about them. They had those radio hosts. We didn't even play the audio of those radio hosts because they could barely cobble together 10 seconds about talking about hockey. They even the vernacular they were using, they were misspeaking on certain. I went, oof, this is tough. You guys have clearly not watched hockey ever at all. And I get it because you're in Florida. You're barely watching the other teams. But that was tough. That's really tough that in that market where no one cares about hockey, the one thing you guys are now known for is getting swept by the Lightning and going out to strip clubs. That's your offseason. Congrats.
Well, on a similar kind of note, with comparing things to Leafs. Mm-hmm. Paul from Peterborough. Good morning, everyone. Is it harder watching the Blue Jays offense or Zach Hyman and Nas playing as well as they are in the playoffs right now?
Blue Jays offense.
Yeah. happy for Nazem Kadri. Happy. Like, both of those departures are completely understandable ones and guys that I want to see have success anyway. The Hyman thing is the term. The Kadri one, you said earlier, JD, like, everyone figured it had to happen. I didn't like the trade at the time. I didn't like the idea of moving off of Kadri. But if you are working under the constraints of, yes, you're never going to give Zach Hyman that term, and you're never going to give, or you kind of had to move on from Kadri after that second suspension, then, yeah, I want to see them do well.
I don't want to see – I'm not the same as you where I root for the exes. I usually root for my exes to die alone. That's what I want is die alone and never feel a love like the love you felt for me. That's how I want it to be. I'm not better than it. I'm just telling the truth. Like, and I think that anybody who says what Blake just said is a liar, but whatever.
We're talking about sports, not relationships.
They're the same thing. They're the exact same thing to me. They carry as much weight.
I'm much more reasonable about one than the other.
No. So Kadri is a different thing because Kadri is just like, this sucks to say about Hyman because Hyman was a good Leaf too, but Kadri's just like our guy, you know? Like, we watched Kadri grow up to a degree here. He was he's just different. It's just Nazem Kadri is different. He was the first guy in the hope in the Brian Burke drafts where it went, oh, okay, they got some. I know they got Morgan Riley, but Nazem was the guy where you went, oh, wow, it broke a certain way. He had his moment with Don Cherry where we all went, boy, we're all in on this guy. He just – he had that bite to his game. He had that care factor to his game. It was different. He was vocal. He talked a little trash. He fit the market. He loved being a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Yeah, he had that feistiness that we're kind of lacking.
He absolutely loved it. And, yeah, he – like, it just – it was the Nazem Kadri experience outside of – the very beginning where he was obviously fighting it in terms of becoming a pro, and the very end where he buried their chances again, or what we thought were their chances again, by making a reckless play. It was really fun rooting for Kadri. I like Zach Hyman. Zach Hyman to me was, he's going to go down as like an underrated Leaf. Like, he's going to go down as an underrated Leaf all time in terms of his contributions to this group. And you're seeing what he can do in the postseason series, right? Where it's like he can be a goal scorer.
Okay, we still
threat.
Have his radio commercials.
Yeah, he's just, but he's still a nonstop Energizer Bunny guy who forechecks with the best of them and just, you know, can create offense with his tenacity. But you're right, Blake. It's like no one in their right mind could say that the Leafs, given their cap situation, could have given that guy that contract on that term. It just, it wasn't sustainable. It was one of the Leafs' best moves of the offseason, was not getting trapped in a move like that. The Kadri thing, though, is different to me. And I'm sorry, I know we all thought Kadri needed to be traded, but you can't ignore that Kyle Dubas took a centerman who is a bona fide top two center on any team. Literally right now, the best team assembled, arguably, from a talent standpoint in the salary cap era. He's their number two guy. And traded him for a defenseman that was a nightmare here and walked after a year. And a winger, frankly, because they thought he was a center, a winger who has had very fleeting moments of being noticeable and is probably at his best when he's on a third line in a wing position. You know, like, it's just, the Leafs also gave up a third round pick in that trade. Like, it's lost to history because who cares? But that they felt as though the value was even so much that it was commensurate where Colorado wasn't throwing in picks. Like, boy, that's a tough one. It's funny because it works for one of both ways, where you could make the case of you could trade a Nylander this offseason because you traded Kadri. Like, sometimes you do need to make a trade, but then that's the argument also against making a trade where you go, hey, this is what happens when you make trades from a disadvantageous position, which is you can get broken in them. And the Leafs got – Kyle Dubas got taken out back and beat the hell out of in that trade. It is one of the worst trades – like, again, the two of the worst trades that have been made in the last 5 years are Mason Marchment for Dennis Malgin and Nazem Kadri for Tyson Berry and Alex Kerfoot. They're both owned by the same guy. It has to be brought
Love looking at the trade trees for stuff like this, too, because you remember things like Callie Rosen was also in that deal, headed to Colorado, and then he's the one who came back, and now he's knocking Kadri into Binnington to start this whole thing together.
Weird.
Weird how that all works out. Not weird. Carlos Peña being a great guest, the creator of Placata. Let's see if he can help us get his Placata guys back on track for the Toronto Blue Jays. Carlos Peña next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.